Please note this episode contains descriptions of murder, kidnapping, violence, addiction, and branding. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Trafficked. I'm so happy you're here today and really excited to introduce you to Amber Rose, who is just a bright, shining light. Amber's story proves that this is not just something that goes on somewhere across the world. Some far-off lands is not the only place where sex trafficking occurs. It happens right here in our own towns, our own cities, and in fact, our own backyard. Welcome, Amber Rose. So happy you're here.
Hi, yes, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Welcome. So I'd love to hear your story in your own words. And I'd like you to include, when you think about it, what are some of the things that set the stage for this to occur? So if you think about those things, because, you know, I want to not only share your beautiful story, but also for people who are listening, you know, we've got this crazy idea from TV movies and stuff like that, that it looks a particular way. It doesn't. But I want to create something that helps people as well, so they know what to be on the lookout for. We know how to protect our women, our humans, right?
So, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for being here. Please.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of importance from my story comes from where it started. And that was a very toxic relationship I was in that was on again, off again. We started dating when I was in high school, but he was in college already. He was 2 years older than me. And basically, I dropped out of college. I was 17 at the time. And I dropped out of college to move to Orlando to be with him. And it wasn't until I got there that I saw him abusing Adderall and alcohol. And the combination of those two create a very angry human being and environment. But there were good times that made it very hard for me to want to walk away from this. I still pictured the same sweet guy that sent me flowers every weekend back in high school. I wasn't able to fully see. And so I was willing to do whatever it took to get him what he needed. Yeah. And he comes from money. And, you know, his family was giving him money all the time and allowance. And he was spending that on drugs and alcohol the whole time. And he would blow through it very quickly. So I was working 4 jobs at the time. And he had asked me to pick up another job to get more money to pay for more substances. And so I did. And the only job that I could really fit into my schedule was going to be a personal assistant job. And so I started looking and I found one on Craigslist for this guy and his computer company. And so I took the job, I met with him, and I became his personal assistant doing all the bookkeeping and stuff for his IT company. I didn't know the other side of his company, and I wasn't aware of who he was as a person. He built up trust with me when I worked alongside him for 3 or 4 months before he took me. And during the first 3 weeks of me working for him, his car, he got into a really bad car accident and his car was out of service. So he had that perfect excuse for me to pick him up for work and, you know, bring the checks to his house. So every Friday I would take the checks from the office. I would bring them to his property and I would give it to him. But he would always walk out to my car and meet me and take them. And then he would go back into the house. He had gotten on a very close relationship with me to where he actually met my boyfriend at the time that was going through all of this, because he had to ride with me one time to go pick up the checks because I had left some at my house. And so I went to go pick them up. So they met, and so we built that trust with him as well.
Wow.
And he brought beers over there. Like, he was prepared. He knew what he was doing. And
did he know in advance that he was going to meet your boyfriend that day?
No, he did not. Nope. And so then, oddly enough, we went through a really, really, really dark period, me and my then boyfriend. And basically what had happened was he hit rock bottom. And I called his parents. He ended up going away. And the person that I confided in with this is my boss,
right,
Andrew. And, you know, we're spending all this time together. I'm having to drive him to appointments and meet clients and such. And so we developed this bond. And then he upped my pay. Mm. And then, you know, he knew that I knew nobody else in Orlando. The only person that I knew had just been taken away. And so he took that as his opportunity to kind of reel me in. And, you know, one day he told me, you know, hey, can you bring the checks to my house? And I said, yes, absolutely. But the thing I didn't know is that he was already premeditating all of this. And he had said to me when I got there, I told him I was outside, and I made it a very strict point to not go into the house just because of my morals and my background. But I had already built up so much trust with him at this point that when he told me he was on the phone with an important client, well, he just upped my pay. I want to make my boss happy. So
yep.
He asked me if I could, you know, bring the paperwork into his house, the checks. And I said, yes, absolutely. And so when I did, there was two other guys in there, and they basically threw me to the ground and they cut my clothes off of me. And that was it for me. And I was the first one that was held in there. And then it started off as he signed me up for streammate.com. And it started off as giving me, you know, a monetary digit to hit every day. And I would have to be touching myself on camera. And it started off as that. And then it slowly progressed to him bringing two more girls into the house. And then making us do stuff with each other on camera for money. And then it became him having everything going on streaming. Everything was being streamed live, but also recorded and sold on the side. And then he started allowing people to come into the house. And he actually had an ad on Backpage. And that's when everything kind of took off. And I knew that in order to live and survive this, that I had to adapt and overcome. And I knew the only way that I could kind of justify me being there is for me to become, you know, kind of queen bee.
Mm.
Like, to put on the performance of a lifetime and make yourself just so valuable that he would want you there to teach the others how to be. And that's kind of what I became. And that's the dynamic I took on, but I also protected them. And I would always say, no, let me do it and let me show them.
Mm.
And
God.
So I took a brunt of it all. And actually recently, unfortunately, one of the girls was killed inside the house. She ended up getting pregnant. And then the other one, she actually was
Was she killed for being pregnant? What's the correlation?
Yes. Yes.
God, how did you find out about that?
I was there for it.
Got it.
He had just brought her into the house and he didn't know she was pregnant. She didn't know she was pregnant at the time. And then, you know, she started, like, she was throwing up a lot and really sick and, like, he found out. He went and got a test. He found out, and she lost her, you know, her valuability. So she had to be let go. So they made it look like an overdose and then dropped her off at a bench outside of Walmart.
God almighty. So does... Wow. Does her... I mean, did she have a family? Did they find out this? Did the authorities come in at some point? What happened? Can you talk about that?
Right now, I know I told you a little bit about it, but I'll share it now with the listeners. I didn't press my charges, so I'm in the process of pressing my own charges against him and kind of getting that closure for myself. So there's certain things I can and cannot speak about, and this is one of those topics that's a little iffy, so I don't want to ruin my chances at all.
Yep. Very good. Very good. So, okay, back to the house. She comes in, is killed. Then you started to speak about another woman. What else were you going to say?
So the other female in the house, her and I, we got very, very, very close. And there was one night that Andrew is my kidnapper. He actually stole my car, which was a Cadillac at the time and had OnStar. He actually stole my car and went to take the other female and give her to somebody else. And in the process of him doing that, he left me with somebody that he referred to as his cousin. And his cousin was in charge of me. Well, his cousin knew that I was naked, and I really had, like, there was like miles until I could find a house. And so he knew there really was no chance of me like escaping. So when he went around the corner to do a drug deal, I knew it was my chance. That there's a 50-50 chance he's either going to chase me because I'm so valuable, or he's going to run and hide because, you know, Andrew is going to kill him when he finds out. So I took that as my chance. I ran. I did not look back. I ended up at this very nice couple's house. And I called the authorities, and they were able to track my car through OnStar and found him in a little town in Florida, about a few hours away from here. Well, from Orlando.
Amber Rose, so there you are, literally running through the street naked. Is it day or is it night?
Oh, no, it's nighttime. It's about 2-3 a.m.
Oh, my God. And so you stopped at a house. Walk us through what happened then.
You know, I really don't remember too much. It's all kind of a blur. I just knew that I was not ready to take it on. I did not want to talk to the cops about it. So I ended up staying in Orlando for a little bit after this. I ended up leaving there. I went back to my ex's apartment. Well, he still was my then. He just was away, kind of trying to work on himself.
What I was talking about, Amber Rose, is how do you explain that you're naked when you show up at somebody's house? I mean, people look at this kind of thing like, what do you do?
You know, we didn't have the luxury of drugs in that house. We were given a bottle of vodka, and it was the Absolute vodka. And we were allowed to take 2 shots in the morning. And then we were brought a 10-piece nugget meal, a large sweet tea, and a large fry from McDonald's to split. And
oh my God. For
so you could tell I was very malnourished. And you could tell I was abused. You know, I was stabbed 2 times while I was in there. I was burned. I have cigarette burns. I mean, you could just tell that what I had endured, like I was showing up at their door, like at their mercy. And the woman immediately, it was so crazy because she like opened the door, saw my face and just grabbed me and pulled me in. Like, she didn't even say anything to me. And her husband ran, grabbed me a blanket, and she went and got the phone. She gave me clothes. I actually still have those clothes today here. And it was just such an act of kindness and God that it was just so incredible. And so that's something that I'll never forget.
Yes.
And so the kind of peace that they brought to me is something that I want to bring to other, you know, survivors and victims and anybody that's been through really anything, because anything could be traumatic.
Yes. So. I mean, and there's no denying that what you've been through is unprecedented and unimaginable for most people. It's incredibly generous of you to say, I mean, look, trauma is a spectrum, right?
Right.
But it impacts us in similar ways. But it's incredibly generous of you to say that, because everybody does go through things that are unplanned, unwanted, and traumatic. But so how have you overcome?
So this is where my story takes a really interesting turn. You're going to want to turn it into a movie after this, because it's just mind blowing. So I ended up staying in Orlando. I met these three girls. I became really close with these girls and I partied hard. I was still going to college, but I partied so hard. And I was going to college studying psychology, wanting to understand my kidnapper. And, you know, I knew I wasn't going to understand it. And at this point, I had, you know, compartmentalized everything so well that nobody knew what was going on. I didn't even know. I blocked that out from my life. And I partied to the point of, I just knew that partying wasn't going to help me. And I was just so torn and so distraught. And I was like, I've got to get out of Orlando. So at this point, you know, I'm smoking tons of weed. I'm, you know, drinking every night. I'm going out to parties. I'm hanging out, going to clubs, you know, have four boyfriends and just doing everything that, you know, anybody who's gone through trauma, either they revert in and they don't want to be touched, or they act out sexually. I chose to act out sexually. So I called my grandpa and I told him I needed X amount of money and I needed it now. And I can't tell him why. And I can't tell him what happened. I just told him, I love you, but I need it. And my grandpa and I are very close. And he immediately, you know, gave it to me. And I took it and I went to New York City. I got an apartment up there. And I started living in New York City. But I didn't know anybody there. So how did I meet people? I went out drinking and going to the clubs. And of course, a pretty blonde girl shows up to a club. The owners, the promoters, they all swarm to you. Oh, you're alone? Let me take you to my VIP. Here, have some free drinks all night. So I'm hanging out with all the, you know, owners and promoters of the clubs. And so at this point, I'm kind of living that high life. And in my eyes. And I started to meet a few celebrities and I started dating this guy who ended up being a well-known model out there. And he was into heavier things than I knew about. And so, of course, I take that path and I go down that road with him. And we ended up moving in together. I went on a cruise to Mexico. I came back and he was leaving. He wanted to leave. He wanted to go back home. And so I said, okay. And I ordered him a cab and I said, well, I hope you can pack fast. Your cab's going to be here in 10 minutes and kind of sent him on his way. And after that, I just buckled down and I cried and I was just so lost and distraught and I didn't know what to do. And, you know, I called my parents and I told my mom, like, I need help. I really need help. And so she said, okay, well, come home. And I said, okay. So I ended up getting on a flight with all my three animals that I had accumulated. And I go back to Orlando. Well, I go back to live with my mom. I live with my mom for maybe 2 nights and I can't do it because I'm like, oh my gosh, when you don't live with your parents for a while and then you go back and they know that you've been out drinking, they're just on top of you.
Yep.
And so at this point, my mom's acting out of fear. I'm acting out of guilt. And I end up asking my grandpa for more money and I got a 2-story place in Orlando. Moved back to Orlando, started going out to parties again with those same girls. Then I ended up flying out to New York every weekend and coming back to Orlando. And I was just all over the place. And my mom saw it and she knew it. And so she ended up convincing me to come back to her house and she would set me up my own like little house on their property. And so we did that and it was working for a little bit. And, you know, I stopped smoking weed. I stopped drinking and it worked for maybe about 3 weeks. And, I ended up meeting up with an old friend from high school that I never did drugs or never drank, never went to a high school party ever. And so I met up with this girl that I knew from high school and I knew that she smoked weed. And all I wanted to do was get high and have a drink. So I ended up meeting up with her one night, hadn't seen her in years. Her boyfriend was a drug dealer and he laced the blunt with PCP. And I've done a few harder drugs like cocaine and Molly and, you know, things like that, but I had not done PCP. I hadn't really fully tripped, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What do you mean he links the blonde with that? What do you mean?
Like he laced the blunt.
Oh, laced it. The blunt. I'm sorry. Yes. Got it. Okay.
And so when that hit me, I instantly, my heart started pounding. I thought I was dying. I really thought this is it. I'm dead. So my friend took me outside of her boyfriend's apartment, sat me down, and I tried calling my mom on the phone. And my so-called friend took my phone from me and told me, no, he's going to get in so much trouble. Just breathe. It'll be fine. I yelled out to Siri, hey, Siri, call father. Well, at this point, I just moved in my parents' property and they gave me one of their company's cars, which has a tracker on it. So my dad was able to get the call, heard somebody like wrestling with the phone and hung up. So he got my sister, they got in his truck. And they tracked where my car was and they were able to come and find me. And my friends had left me on the stairs, like dying, puking up black goo. So that night when I went home, you know, my mom took care of me. My dad kind of just left me there on the floor of my house. And my mom took care of me. And the next morning, she took me to see one of our family doctors who, it's a small town, so we kind of know everybody there. So we went to go see him, and his cousin had just gotten out of a rehab facility in Jacksonville. So he was telling us about that, and my mom was trying to convince me to go. Well, we went home, we sat down, we looked at the computer, I looked at where it was, and I said, I'll go. But you have to take me now. Like we have to start driving there right now.
Cause you knew so you would change your mind or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I knew I needed it and I wanted it, but I didn't want to go.
Yes.
But I knew I needed it. So I knew if I had gotten there, it would make it harder for me to leave. So yeah. I was just like, you just have to get me there. Just get me there. So I still have my clothes on from the night before with throw up all over them. I've got throw up in my hair. I look a freaking nightmare. And my mom throws me in the car and we start driving to Jacksonville right away. And
how far is that drive, there. Amber Rose?
It is an hour and 45 minutes.
Okay.
So we get there, my mom says goodbye to me. And about 3 days in, I tried to AMA, which is against medical advice, sign myself out. I realized everybody in there had serious drug problems and that my drug problem was not an issue. And at this point, still nobody knows what I had gone through.
And you hadn't gotten any therapy, read any books, done anything that's going to heal what's between your ears at this point?
Nothing.
None of that occurred. Okay. So you're just in this self-destructive, it sounds like, spiral that we all know so well when you've endured something like this, where, tell me if this sounds accurate, you just have to calm the crazy between your head, between your ears. And what I mean by that is reliving the horror. And you can't silence it. Drugs don't do it. Nothing you can do silence it. Not even sleep, because it pervades your nightmares, is what I found anecdotally. And then with all the people that I've worked with and interviewed. Is that the same for you?
Absolutely.
So, you try to sign yourself out, and then what happens? When do you finally get help?
So
what's happening?
My mom shows up after I sign the AMA papers. My mom shows up with a judge. One of her friends that's a judge shows up with my mom, and Stuart Marchman asks me to complete 30 days of rehab.
And Stuart's the judge?
No, Stuart Marchman acts, but the judge
Stuart
is from
Okay,
our
got
town.
It, got it, got it. And so that's so, like,
I'm like, I'm like, I am stuck. I'm here. I've got to do it. So I do it. And about halfway through, I meet this woman, Madeline, who really opens my eyes to God. And, you know, I start kind of getting into it. And, you know, at first it was a little cultish to me. And then it started becoming a way of life.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, I could see this. And the therapist there, they all knew that whatever was going on with me, I needed help through sex, like whatever it was, because they had my computer and my phone, and they went through all of it. The therapist there at the place I went to, they went through every single thing. So they were seeing the pictures I was sending, the videos, the way I was talking to men, how many men I was talking to at one time. They saw all that destructive behavior, because I hide it. And so my mom found this really great place called The Ranch in Tennessee and sent me there. And I went to the sex house there and started working on what they thought was sexual addiction, which they had me write out my timeline, and we have to present it to the whole group. And so as I was writing out my timeline, when I got to the part where I had to talk about my trauma, I broke down. I had a mental breakdown, and I don't remember 3 of those days. I was put on suicidal ideation and brought to the main cabin house. And then when I finally got out of that, I started doing a lot of EMDR every single day. We broke it down. I came clean about my trauma. I spoke about it. I went through it. I started doing a lot of work on me every single day. You know, we would wake up at 5 a.m. and our last group was at 8 p.m.
Wow.
And then we'd go to bed and do the next same thing the next day. And I did that for about 6 months. And I left from there to a sober living house in Mississippi called the McCoy House. And when I went there, you have to go to intensive outpatient therapy when living in that house. It's a part of the rules there. And you have to work at the thrift shop. There's a lot of things that you have to do. So it just teaches you how to ease back into the world as you're still doing your therapy. So it's like a stepping stone. So I still was going to therapy. I actually was different than the other women in the house. I didn't go to the group that they all went to, the therapy group they went to. I went to a different company and worked on just sexual trauma. And I was going 5 days out of the week, not 3. So my experience was very different. And by that time, you know, I really practiced those things every single day. And my dad abruptly came there to Mississippi, packed me up, and brought me back home. And at this point, I didn't know this. My mom didn't know this. He had, you know, planned to take off with this woman to go down to South Florida. So he brought me home as a distraction. And my sister got really sick, and my mom was living with my sister in the hospital in Tallahassee. My dad took off. He's living with some woman down in South Florida, and he left me keys to a car, a cell phone, and a debit card on the counter, and left me there by myself and my little brother, who was like living with his friends he does baseball with. So I, you know, came home to a very disturbed environment when I had just gotten out of such a peaceful enclosure. So,
and how was that transition for you? Were you able to transition with everything you'd learned, or was it, did the chaos take over?
You know, I'll be completely honest. The chaos took over. The first guy that I met out in public, I started dating him. I moved in with him and his family about 2 weeks after knowing him. And I moved to Jacksonville with him, and I started working at a psych ward. And then I started working as an addiction counselor, and I started getting back into that realm. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started practicing all these things again. I got out of that toxic relationship, got into two more probably not so great relationships after that, and then now married. So definitely a huge transition. Yes.
So in terms of getting your life back, Amber Rose, what would you say were the most important things that you've done? Is the relationship with God something that's leading the way, or what is helping you be your best today?
Honestly, it is my passion for this and wanting to kind of shape the younger society and make it more aware. I want this to be what's talked about in 2021. Everybody makes these jokes about they don't know what 2021 is going to be. And, you know, they have all these parodies out there about, you know, what I think 2021 is going to be versus reality. And I would like for it to be focused on this.
Yeah.
And, you know, focus on mental health, because this goes hand in hand with mental health. And absolutely. So honestly, it's my passion to want to change it, because the way I see my unfortunate events that I went through is God didn't give me anything I couldn't handle. And I survived in that house because I chose to, and I wanted to, because I knew that the other two weren't going to make it out alive. And if they did make it out alive, they would never be okay. And the other one that did make it out alive, I actually live quite close to her, and I do get to see her, and she's met my husband, and we've, you know, hung out. She has children now. And so we have that support system for each other. And she actually reached out to me, which I haven't heard from her in years. I was told that she, you know, had passed on. Mm. And so that's a really great support system that we have. And I started speaking about this on my social media page. I created my own podcast, my own company, and that's kind of when a lot of people started reaching out to me. And it's just like, this is what I want. I wanted to build a community where we all could speak comfortably about the uncomfortable. Yes. Kind of break that stigma.
And in speaking of the stigma and it being an uncomfortable topic, it's how would you wake people up to know that we have to discuss this? And if we don't, what's in jeopardy is our own loved ones, ourselves. How would you wake people up?
You know, honestly, I think it's something that people have to do for themselves. I think that everything that you go through in life and everything happens for a reason. I think that something will happen that'll wake them up when it's supposed to wake them up. The only thing I can say is for us to push the word out there about how, you know, common this is and how unseen this is. Don't turn a blind eye to it, and, you know, always be open to different perspectives, and just pay attention to your surroundings. You know, don't live in fear, but definitely pay attention to your surroundings. And a lot of times I see, you know, even on like scary movies and stuff, people don't go with their gut feeling. They don't. They hear the knock at the door, but they still go and answer the door. So, I mean, just don't answer the door. Go with your gut is like my ultimate advice.
So good. And if you were to meet somebody who had previously been in your shoes, somebody who had been sex trafficked, what would you say to them if they were still in that pit of despair that you know so well?
I would say nothing to them. I would hug them and I would tell them, I'm here when you're ready. And then I would make myself a known presence in their life. And I would let them see how I live. And yes, I do have my daily struggles, but I have a life too. And my life is free now. And so I would just kind of shove that in their face and bring them around that, because I am such a light, because I am free. Bring them around the light. And that light is going to be stronger than the darkness at some point. And so when it is, you know, that person will let you through there. And that's what I'm doing with the female that did make it out of there. She, when she reached out to me, she wasn't ready to see me, even though we live only an hour away. And then just recently she was ready to see me. And even then it was so hard for us, but now I'm going to her baby's birthday party. And, you know, now we're talking all the time, but it was extremely hard for us to, I mean, she even started crying. She couldn't even look at me in the face. She said, I can't see her face, because the one thing that we used to do is when we were like enduring a trauma, we would always just lock eyes with each other and we would say, just look at me. And like, that's your safe place. And that's what we created in our minds. And so it's really hard. And, you know, now she's like, I'm ready to get help. I'm ready to have what you have. And so I think that's just how it happens.
Wow. That's just so glorious. And when you go through those struggles today, because, mm-hmm. you know, we're human, they never stop. What do you tell yourself? How do you pull yourself out of them and keep being the light when the darkness comes?
You know, I kind of just breathe and I kind of take a reality check. And, you know, whatever my struggle is that I'm going through, I do grounding techniques to ground myself. I'll tap my collarbone, or I'll blow into a cup of ice, or I'll sing a song. You know, I do something to bring me back to what my reality is. Yeah. And I find gratitude for something so small that's around me. Like if it's a pot or a pan in the kitchen, I find so much gratitude that I have that pan or that pot, because that's something that I didn't have previously. And so I guess through gratitude and reality check, honestly.
Yeah. Thank you for your courage and your generosity. And thank you for being willing to be seen and be heard. It's an immense gift. I'm speaking on behalf of myself, but I know what it's like to be in that aftermath and feel like you're alone and that nobody could possibly understand you.
Right.
And that you're somehow damaged or something. And you speaking so confidently and so full of love and heart, it shines a light on the path for so many. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share today and leave us with?
You know, my quote I live by is, be the change you wish to see in the world. And that's just what I'll leave you with is, amen. You know, is that, you know, and the world needs your gifts.
Yep. Thank you, Amber Rose. Look forward to seeing you again. Thank you. Yes. You are amazing. If you or someone you know has been taken for sex trafficking, or you suspect that's happening, call 888-373-7888 or text the word HELP to 233-733. With your help, we can stop human trafficking now. To keep up with all of our latest work, please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Trafficked Series. Please be sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to our podcast. And listen to our next episode with survivor Jose Alfaro, who has worked with several anti-human trafficking organizations around the globe to spread awareness on trafficking, specifically within the LGBTQ+ community. Until then, I am your host, Cheryl Hunter, and we are here to end human trafficking. So remember, if you see something, say something. This is a Conveyor Media production. Host and creator, Cheryl Hunter. Executive producers, Colin Whelan and Rebecca Sermons. Head producer, writer, editor, Celine Beth Calderon. And music by Mickey O'Brien.